they said, just, you don't have to say the word God. You don't have to believe in God. You just substitute whatever is working for you.
I am an alcoholic.
I am an alcoholic.
I am an alcoholic.
I am an alcoholic.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is. It's evening here, afternoon where you're at. My name's Raymond. I'm an alcoholic, and today I am joined with
Kate.
Kate?
Yeah, Kate.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Well, you had to think about that.
Yeah, I did. I was waiting for you to say it.
I'm messing with you. No, we already had a cross communication, so I thought I could sneak one in on you real quick for making me wait. I'm just kidding.
You'll probably get a few more out of me for sure.
Yeah, it's all good though. No, this is a continue, but piggybacking off my last episode, I met which was the episode Dr. Lucy. I met her on TikTok, and I met Kate on Twitter. I've been putting posts out there looking for guests, and she responded, and this is where we're at. And she's coming all the way from where are you coming from?
Yeah, I live on the Sunshine Coast, which is East Coast Australia in the state of Queensland.
In the state of Queensland. That's amazing. Yeah. This is what technology. And I wish I would have thought about this before we talked, because there's an actual part of the big book, and this was brought up in a conversation I had with someone the other day. We're talking about like the future of like Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery, you know, because the big book's like almost 100 some years old, if not, you know. And I'm talking to someone I've never met in person, and it was you responded, I responded, and I don't even know how many miles away you're from where I'm at, but that's a good distance.
It's a good distance. Yep. 14 hours difference in time.
Yeah. That's just a time zone. I don't even want to think like how long it would take to like even fly. I'm pretty sure that's a long flight too from where I'm at. I'm in Ohio.
Whereabouts? Ohio.
So,
yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a long flight.
Yeah. But I always wanted to go to Australia because Australia is dangerous.
Yeah, so they say.
Yeah.
It's dangerous if you put yourself in dangerous places.
Yeah.
In the creek or the ocean.
Yeah. Do you have any pet crocodiles or anything?
Personally, no. Actually, I don't know how many people do have pet crocodiles here. Most people try to avoid them.
Oh, I thought everyone in Australia was issued a koala bear and a crocodile.
I guess I missed that part.
See, I am very...
Yeah, maybe I have to... See, I'm not a citizen yet, so maybe I have to wait to become a citizen.
Okay. All right.
I'll let you know.
So, Kate, what made you want to come on to the Many Paths to Sobriety podcast?
I first joined Twitter quite recently because I wanted to share my story more widely about being an alcoholic in recovery. Because I want to help other people who are also either hoping to get sober or in sobriety and just need some help and advice. Also people who are supporting people in sobriety as well, because that can be really challenging for them too and quite difficult for them to understand. I joined Twitter recently and your page was suggested to me and I liked it, followed it, and I like what you put out there. I like that you have you don't take a siloed approach of you can only get sober by doing this, as in many paths to sobriety. I really like that. And I love that you're doing a podcast also to help people share their stories and get the word out there.
I appreciate hearing that. Cause being like an alcoholic, we get into mindsets and it's just like, you know, am I making a difference or am I not? And sometimes you gotta get like put back into reality. And I just had this conversation not too long ago, and I appreciate hearing that. How do I word this? Because you can be in recovery, but how much time you have of continuous sobriety right now?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, so 10 years on the 13th of March, just gone.
Well, happy 10th birthday, belated birthday.
Thank you.
Have you heard it that way in Australia? AA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit weird for me because I got sober in the UK and then we had been living in Australia, but my husband moved us back to the UK because he couldn't handle looking after me alone because of my drinking. So we moved back to where we are from and lived there, and that's where I got sober. And then we moved back to Australia, but to a different part. And I didn't share the reason for me not drinking with anybody. So I have friends and I have colleagues, and I ran a business. I ran a small gym and I never shared with anybody. So when I started writing my newsletter or my blog about being an alcoholic, I sent it to a few people that I cared about and asked them to read it. And that was the first that they'd heard. So when I got to my 10th birthday, I had very few people who knew about it. So it was almost, I wish I'd had lots of people who knew, because it's something to celebrate, not something to hide.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people do have, you know, that they feel shame with it or guilt, but if we're in active recovery and sober, there's nothing to be ashamed of, because we now live in the present and not the past. We shouldn't reflect of our past selves, and it's hard to get rid of. I mean, I still have a lot of things I'm still cleaning up from my own personal past, but I'm not ashamed of it. And but I did the work to get there.
I think for me, my concern was because at the beginning of my sobriety, I was very ashamed. And because we're conditioned by society to be ashamed that being an alcoholic is a bad thing. And I had internalized that. And then when I moved to this part of the country, and as I said to you earlier, when we were chatting, I live in quite a small town and I was running a small business, and I was scared that people would judge me and that my business would not succeed because of that. So I was assuming that other people would think badly of me without giving them the option. So I chose not to share.
So is that the not sharing, is that because of like the anonymity? Oh, I hate this word. Just because of like how close-knit the community is out there for like where you go to AA or something?
Yeah, I was worried that everybody here talks. There's lots of gossip. It's a fairly small town. And I was just worried that people would be like, oh, you know, Kate, she runs that gym, but she's an alcoholic, you know? Don't go there. even though I'm not an active alcoholic and I wasn't at the time. So, yeah, I was worried that people would talk and people would judge and it would impact my business.
So how do you feel about that now?
I do wish that I'd been more open sooner. I sold my business just over 6 months ago and I've been free to think about what's important since then. And I felt once I'd shared with people who were close to me and once I'd started writing and sharing with the wider online community, I felt a sense of relief, like the secret was a burden.
Yeah, because I think I saw one of your posts that said, my secret sobriety.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, I like that. I just like the way that it just, I read it and I was just like, I like this. I'm still going through it. I'm gonna end up linking your, is it a blog? Or is it?
Yeah, I reckon it's a blog, really.
Yeah. I'm gonna link some of your stuff over to my website, manypasttosobriety.org, which would be MP2 sobriety, the other ones to the podcast. But so when did you realize you're an alcoholic?
When I was 19. So I'm 42 now. When I was 19, that's when I developed chronic alcoholism. And I was drinking morning, day, evening, night, and was physically addicted as well as psychologically addicted. I've been drinking from the age of 12, but then really sort of age 15, 16, 17, 18, starting on weekends and then escalated to most nights by the time I was 18. And then by the time I was 19, it had just consumed me completely.
Yeah, that's a pretty quick progression there too. Consume, and that's what I like about this, because some people's progression shorter, some people's is longer. I mean, I started off as a binge drinker for the longest time, and it took years for it to catch up to, you know.
Yeah.
Put me to where, you know, to where I had to realize it was a problem. So, but yeah, that's a real fast progression there. So
yeah.
So at 19, you realized you were an alcoholic, and
I knew deep down I was an alcoholic. I mean, you can't deny it when you're drinking all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was drinking spirits. I was drinking vodka. And, you know, physically shaking. The whole body was shaking if I didn't have a drink. But I never ever said it out loud. I never, ever asked for help at that point. Okay. I managed to sober myself up. I managed to slowly just decrease how much I was drinking, which is some kind of miracle in itself because it goes against the whole rules of alcoholism. But I was doing a gap year from the UK. I was doing a stint in Italy where my parents had thought it was a really good idea to send me to a university for foreigners where people from all over the world go to learn Italian. And I had chronic anxiety that was completely undiagnosed, and I'd always used alcohol to deal with that. And then I just was out of my depth. I couldn't cope when I got to Italy with all of these people from around the world, all of these confident people. And I just couldn't handle it. And so that's when my drinking just went completely off the rails. But I had to come home, and I knew that I couldn't come home in that state. So I managed to wean myself off the booze before I got back to the UK.
And how old were you when you did that?
I was 19 still.
Yep. So you're still 19 and you went back. Yep. This is prior to the actual recovery part. I'm just trying to make sure I have my timeline together here. So you get back home and you kind of want to take me from there to the what you feel comfortable taking me to.
So I guess I didn't stop drinking properly until I was 32. So I had another 13 years of the alcoholic trying to control their drinking, convincing themselves that they don't need to give up completely, not being able to accept that I would have to give up completely, but also having had this experience of being a chronic alcoholic, chronically addicted to alcohol. I knew, you know, you have that, I don't know, I just had this horrible feeling in my gut that one day it was all just going to go to shit again. And I tried as much as possible to control my drinking. And I went from periods of time when I could be quite abstemious and I could just have a glass of wine. And then periods of time where I was very, very close to falling off the edge of the cliff again. And then I'd managed to rein it back in. So it was very, very up and down until right at the end when we had been living in Australia for a few years in Brisbane. And I decided to retrain as a personal trainer and I was working in a personal training studio. And it was really, really dog-eat-dog kind of aggressive and fairly bullying kind of environment. And that took me back to, I think, took me back to my childhood and my anxiety escalated. And that's when I just started drinking all the time again and became chronically addicted again.
So you're saying it was like bullying with the personal trainer world over there, and it brought back to like childhood. So you think your drinking was from bullying from childhood then, or?
I think there's a few different elements. My parents were really emotionally neglectful and my mum was a bully. She, just seemed to take every opportunity to tear me down with negative comments and nothing was ever good enough. The only thing I ever got praised for was being academically good, but it was more in terms of I was expected to get good grades and I would be in big trouble if I didn't. I was just extremely shy, extremely anxious, had no self-confidence, no self-worth, didn't like myself, felt like I was only fun or engaging to be around if I was drinking. And then I got bullied at school. I got bullied at extracurricular activities, had no support at home. And so that just sort of continued to tear down any shred of self-esteem I would have. And then once I got back into this new career path, into the PT environment, and then all of a sudden people were being bullying towards me and towards other people, and it was fairly aggressive, dog-eat-dog environment. And I crumpled, couldn't really cope. But I think other elements of my alcoholism are because I was a very heavy drinker on a regular basis at a young age, and that, I believe, changes your brain's pathways and just makes you constantly reach for more. And also, I think there possibly a genetic element as well. I know, but I have two cousins by blood ties, So I only have one auntie from my entire family, and that she has two boys, and one of them was a chronic alcoholic, and unfortunately he passed away from alcoholism. And I believe both my parents have issues with alcohol. So I do, and I, you know, it's in everybody's family, I think, if you look back far enough, normally only a couple of generations, but it seems to be quite strong in my family. So I feel like there's sort of three main reasons there why I personally became an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so what was, what was your, I don't like saying bottom, but I'm going to say, what was your gift of desperation to look for help?
So like I said, my husband moved us back to England, and he'd got an apartment for us to live in. And then he said, I don't want you here while you're drinking. But previously I'd been, because when you're drinking, when you're in the depth of addiction, nothing is more important to the addict than getting their next drink. So, and drink becomes more important than anything else in the world. It's insane. And it tells you, you know, I don't want that person around me because they're trying to stop me drinking. So I was pushing my husband away because I knew that he was going to try and stop me drinking. So we ended up living separately, and I was only a few doors down the road, but I was staying at my dad's house. And like I said, emotionally neglectful, not in touch with his emotions, doesn't really know what to do in a crisis. So essentially, he was enabling my drinking by just letting me be. He didn't like to see what was happening, but he wasn't doing anything to stop it either. And I just got to the point where I feel that my husband never ever gave up on me. And having him there, having that person to live for, made a big difference. And also being in that deep into addiction is like a constant fight, constantly fighting against this sort of demon that's possessing you, that's telling you drink, 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 drink. And this little person inside, that's who you are, saying you shouldn't do this, you don't want to do this, you have to make it stop somehow. And just having that, just wasn't doing anything. I was drinking, I was passing out, I was drinking, I was passing out. That was my day. And then occasionally I'd have to go out, I'd have to find some money, and I'd have to find some alcohol somewhere, because you need alcohol on hand all the time. And it was just this constant fight of just continuing that pattern. And I just felt, I was so sick that I wouldn't eat food because I was scared that the food would soak up the alcohol in my stomach, that I would be wasting alcohol by it being soaked up by food in my stomach. So I was losing weight. I was in a very, very bad place. And I think I just surrendered. I just gave up. I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And I'm so thankful that I made that decision that day. I'd gone to my husband and I was thinking, so right now I'm in the apartment with my husband and it's afternoon. I'm slowly sobering up, but not really. I have no alcohol around me. I have no money. So what am I going to do to get more alcohol? And then I thought, you know what? This is such a hard fight, always trying to find the money, trying to find the alcohol to feed this addiction. I just need to give up this fight. I just need to surrender. And I said to him, I want you to take me to hospital. So we went to hospital, and thankfully, because it was a Tuesday night, the doctor who admitted me, or the nurse who admitted me, said, luckily we have a bed on the ward, and the only reason I admitted you was because I could see the desperation in your eyes. They wouldn't normally admit alcoholics. And I thought, well, that's some kind of miracle in itself. But also, what are you supposed to do as an alcoholic if they won't normally admit you to hospital when you know that you're going to need medical assistance detoxing?
Now, was this in the UK, or was this in Australia?
Yeah. This was in the UK.
I thought like the UK was like, you got all this awesome healthcare and stuff.
Yeah, you do, but not if you're an addict.
Oh, so if you're an addict, yeah, or you're an alcoholic, we're not going to help you.
Yeah, basically. So the doctor had said, you know, we wouldn't normally admit you, but because we have a bed and because I can see the desperation in your eyes, essentially she took pity on me that night.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying to wonder, because I know, like, here, you go to the ER, and they'll, like, I don't know the exact process, but they could treat you for detoxing and stuff like that.
Right.
I think.
Well, maybe it's changed. I don't know, but that day, she did say, we wouldn't normally admit you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what would have happened if they'd said, go home. What would have happened?
Oh, I don't know.
I know, right?
I'm not David Copperfield. So you get admitted to the hospital. How long are you in the hospital for this?
It was close to a week, I think. I did have a seizure, and they gave me some medication. So the seizure was a few hours after I was admitted, and they gave me some medication. And I remember, I think I don't even know what medication they gave me, but it, like you said, was a medically assisted detox. And I remember waking up a couple of days later and just feeling this profound sense of calm, like, being an alcoholic is panic, 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 anxiety, anxiety, heart racing, body shaking, you know, and just going from that to this amazing sense of relief and just complete calm. I'll never forget that feeling.
Man. I don't know. I remember my first few days, and I was just like a ball of nerves, but I was a dry drunk at the beginning, so I got no help and did nothing. But so from after you get you get like discharged from the hospital, what was your like steps for your recovery from there?
So when I was in hospital, I started taking an antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication. And I was also visited by a couple of people from AA. So I think there was a system whereby the liver ward would contact AA or vice versa and say, you know, there's someone here that needs help. So I was asked by the nurse, is it okay if they come and talk to you? And I was thought, don't know, you know, still a bit of not sure if I want to go down that route. But then I thought, but yeah, why not? Come on, let's face it. I'm in hospital. I kind of need help. So they came and talked to me. And one of the girls was a few years younger than me, had only a few months sobriety, but she was she was already doing service, and she just took me under her wing. And she, when I was out of hospital, she came by my flat, my apartment, and she walked with me to the meeting, and she just stood by me every step of the way. I didn't do the 90 meetings in 90 days. I just went to, I think, a few a week. But I credit those AA meetings that I went to for that first year with it helped me so much. It was so incredible. It was so eye-opening. When people spoke, it was like they were inside my head, you know, because it's so lonely. You feel like at the beginning, you know, what's going on? Why is this happening to me? I've gone crazy. I'm having a breakdown. Nobody understands it. And then I got there and there's a room full of people who knew exactly what it felt like. And they were talking about it and they didn't judge me. They accepted me and they wanted to support me. And it was just the most, and the tools that they taught me during meetings and from reading the literature and just talking about it. At first, I was way too nervous. I was full of nerves and anxiety. I couldn't talk, but after I'd been to meetings for a little while, I did share. I was terrified at first, but then it got easier. I mean, just having those like-minded people who understand what you've been through, who've all got different tales to tell, all got different backgrounds, all got different levels of drinking, and, you know, nobody's story is the same, but we all get each other. So that was what I did. I did the medication and I did AA for the first year.
So what was the following 9 years?
Well, then so after 13 months, even, we moved back to Australia, so where we live now. And I came to, I still take the medication. It's been really helpful. And I was very resistant to taking it at first, but my husband convinced me, you know, if you have something wrong with your kidneys, you take medication. You have something wrong with your heart, you take medication. Have something wrong with your brain, you take medication. You shouldn't not take it because you think there's some kind of stigma attached to it. Where was I? Oh yeah, what did I do? I came to AA here. But it was so different from the AA that I went to in the UK. And I found, like I said, I was scared that people would talk because I was running a small business. And then I got too busy with work. And then I did the traditional or the warned of alcoholic becomes a workaholic thing. And so I buried most of my stuff in work for about 8 years. And then for the last 6 months or so, I haven't been working. And I thought, you know, I was really scared that when I stopped working, everything would come flooding back and I wouldn't be able to cope and I'd be overwhelmed with emotion. But I do think that first year where I processed so much and learned so much, that set me up. I still have friends in AA that I talk to regularly. But I also developed so much more self-worth and self-confidence. And I know that I'm capable of so many different things now. And that I know that I don't need alcohol. I know that I don't need it. And I'll never say never, because I'm not inviting any kind of bad fate, because it could happen. I know that if I have a drink ever, that would be tragic. By right now, don't feel like that will happen.
Well, today you don't feel like it will happen. right?
Not today, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's all that matters is today, right?
Exactly. So I think, I don't know, I've been really, really lucky because I've never had a single craving since I got sober.
You haven't had a craving or you haven't had an obsession?
I haven't had a craving. I haven't ever thought I want to drink. Well, apart from once when a couple of days in hospital, I thought I could just get dressed and walk down to the shop now and buy some booze. I thought about it for a moment, but I didn't do it.
Man. So did you work the steps with a sponsor in that first year or?
No, I did. I attempted to do, I guess I probably came to AA for about another year or 6 months when I was in Australia. So had a number of different sponsors, but unfortunately I never got all the way through the steps. I found I had a sponsor that told me that I needed to come off my medication, my antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication, in order to be able to have a clear head to do the steps properly. So obviously that's quite dangerous. So I decided not to work with her anymore. And then I had a couple of other sponsors who would just would get really, really dogmatic and really siloed about the approach, which I just found very controlling. Didn't like the idea of being controlled. I mean, this is my personal issues here. This is nothing, I'm not saying, I think AA is excellent and I think the 12-step program is excellent, but my personal experiences with sponsors hasn't been as productive as it could have been.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's not all controlling. It's supposed to be a program of open-minded willingness and listen to suggestion, and some people, you know, may overreact and all that. I don't know your experience with it, but also someone telling you not to take something that's been prescribed to you by a medical professional. People in AA, well, I mean, there's probably, yeah, there's people that are doctors, but they're not your doctors. So it just baffles me to even hear that. I mean, you're not the first person I've heard that from. And it's just, you know, that's like someone in AA, they should know that they should be staying in their own lane and they're not your doctor.
Yeah. And I think, like, you have a great sponsor. Did you say nearly 37 years of sobriety?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my sponsors all were in, you know, maybe 2 years or thereabouts of sobriety when I was starting out. Perhaps I just approached the wrong people. I didn't find the most, you know.
It's not a matter of time for some of the sponsors, just Because you brought up before we started in the show, you were talking about me going to secular AA, and you know, it's not a matter of time. It's just someone that's supposed to take you through the steps. That's all it is. And it's not. There's people out there that practice personalities over the principle of it, and I don't know. It shouldn't be a time thing. You know, I took someone through the steps when I was 6 months sober, and they're, you know, nice. I mean, I just did it the way you're just supposed to do it. You just work the steps, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't, I mean, everyone's got opinions, but when it comes to this, it shouldn't be that. We should just be here to support each other. That's all it's supposed to be. I don't know who you met. Maybe you just have bad luck meeting people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, because 10 years, that's a testament to your own will, because that's a lot of time to have and continuous work on yourself. Not you know, that's very commendable.
I'm a different person now than I was then. Yeah, just being sober and dealing with everything sober, you grow so much from it, and you just become, I feel that getting sober and getting over that level of alcoholism, you feel like, okay, that was the hardest thing in the world, the worst thing in the world, but the best thing in the world, because it led my life down the path it's gone down. Had I not had to overcome that and face, you know, work on my personal growth without alcohol, the things I have achieved since getting sober, I would never, ever have thought possible before getting sober. And the way my life looks now is just mind-blowing, you know? Just the person before would never believe I would have the self-confidence to go ahead and live the life I have.
Yeah, I mean, you got self-confidence. Just imagine you were listening to that person not take your medication, that could have sent you into a relapse. So it's kind of like you started finding your own path. So what do you do for your, like, you say you work on your personal growth. I mean, what do you do? Like, you got some tips or something like that? I mean, this is, what's like your routine to like ground yourself and to continue to work on yourself? You got any secrets or?
Because I mean, I've always been really into trying to look after my health, and I know that exercise, the list of benefits of exercise is almost infinite. But one of the reason why I exercise is for my mental health. So it doesn't have to be intense exercise, but it could be going for a walk on a nice day. It could be doing some yoga. It could be go for a jog or doing some kind of weight training. I try and mix it up as much as possible, but I try and move daily because of the benefits it has for mental health. And it's a kind of one of those snowball effects. It's horrible to start with, and it makes you feel uncomfortable and miserable, but you keep doing it and you keep doing it. And it just, you feel the endorphins, the happy hormones, you feel more positive about yourself. You're more likely to, I'm not preaching don't eat junk food. I eat chocolate like it's going out of fashion.
Chocolate's a junk food?
No, right. True. It's a fruit. the bean grows on trees, right? So, but yeah, and we like to eat chips, and, you know, we like to enjoy food that isn't necessarily classed as healthy. But I do think that once you're exercising, it makes you think, I want to put more nutrients into my body, and you end up making more healthy choices. And when you're exercising, you actually sleep better. And then good quality sleep is essential for good mental health. And it's all, yeah, like I said, like a snowball effect. So for me, exercise is my number one mental health savior. Well, number two after not drinking.
So your path to recovery, like what you plotted out is not picking up, drinking or using,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And fitness.
Yeah. But in between there was AA, and that was essential.
Yeah.
The, what I learned then, all of the tools and the resources and the coping mechanisms, and reading the literature, I learned so much about myself that I had no idea, because I would just drink on it before. And all of that, everything I learned in AA from the fellows and from the literature and from the meetings, that's just stuck with me throughout.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm just assuming right now, but you like mend your relationship with your husband and.
Yeah. He was incredible. He was so supportive, and he, you know, he went online and he learned as much as he could about alcoholism, and he went to Al-Anon. He went a couple of times. He didn't go far. He said he could see how it was helpful to other people and he got something out of it, but he was, you know, obviously dealing with a lot himself and not necessarily that open to sharing himself, because he had to talk. I would come home from meetings bawling my eyes out. I cried a lot, got all of that emotion out. And he, you know, he talked to me about things a lot. So I think maybe he was, okay, that's enough talking. I don't need to go somewhere else and talk about it. I'll just talk it through at home. But he said to me since, he said, you know, I thought, because I've said, I can't believe you stayed. 99% of other people would have left. And he said, no, I said, no, this is not how our life is supposed to look. This is not how it ends. This is not where we're going. And he wanted to fix it, and he wanted to be there for me. And he was, yeah, amazing. I know I couldn't have done it without him.
So he was a big part of your support system then too for the past 10
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. So. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and very, very, yeah, very protective of me in that way as well, you know.
So
making sure I don't get in situations that wouldn't be helpful.
Yeah. Well, that's good. What about you brought up the blog earlier. Let's talk about that and the name of it and where we can find it.
Oh yeah.
And what it's about.
So it's called My Secret Sobriety, because when I started writing it in January, essentially my sobriety or my reasons for not drinking were a secret from the people who live in the community that I live in now, the people who know me, the people I've worked with. And I started writing it on Substack. So if you're on Substack, you just search My Secret Sobriety and it will come up. And then it's completely free to read. So you can jump on and subscribe, and you will get emailed to the blog whenever I send one out. But I wrote it because I'd sold my business, I was free to think, and I'd realized that this secret of mine was more of a burden and that I just needed to share with people because I didn't feel ashamed anymore. And I wanted also to use my experience of, because it was just coming up to my 10 years of sobriety, use my experience to help others who could potentially benefit from hearing from someone who, you know, if I'd carried on drinking, I would probably not have lived for much longer. But then I went on to become 10 years sober, and in the meantime, a businesswoman, live in a beautiful part of the world, have a really nice quality of life, have a really good relationship with my husband who went through that alcoholism with me. And I just thought, you know, when you're in alcoholism, you never think it's ever going to end. You can't see a way out, and you can't see how you can live your life without alcohol. And I just want people to know that you can. It's hard at the beginning, but it gets easier. and it is possible. So that's why I started writing the blog.
Well, I will find a way to get it linked over on my website too for everyone to check that out.
Thank you.
We're coming up on 55 minutes of recovery together. 55. If you listen to this without taking a drink, you are now 55 minutes sober. Pat yourself on the back, because sometimes it's just by the minute for people, you know. And
yeah,
everyone's different. And I really enjoyed you coming on to the show. I wish more people would reach out. You know, it's just everyone's story is unique, because it's hard. I try not to say alcoholics unique, but the stories are unique. I mean, because we share the same disease, the sickness and stuff like that, but our stories are unique in a way, because like how your path and what you're doing day to day and your support system. I mean, that's the other thing, is having that support system. And you don't have a built-in support system. It's finding that support system and getting that built up. And so I really appreciate you, Kate, even though we had some timing difficulties. And
I have to confess, everybody, I can't do maths, and I got the time zone difference wrong. So I was like, hey, Raymond, I'll see you in 2 hours. He was like, you're supposed to be doing it now. Oh, no. So, sorry. I'm very sorry that I was late.
You ain't got to apologize to me. That's nothing. It's nothing.
you made you sit around for an extra half an hour waiting for me, which is really rude.
I've already been sitting in here anyways. I was doing service covering for someone else for another meeting and jumped right into this. It's been Recovery Saturday up in here. So yeah. And now there's one thing, I'm like, I'm just gonna do the podcast, and that's gonna be my service. I win. And now I'm all in with this. I mean, I do whatever I can and try to pay it back when I can, because you know, my past, I have to continually do it, because I know when I get away from doing this type of stuff, I can tell a difference in the way my behaviors are. I'm very, I don't even know a word for it, but like, be fine 1 second, and the next minute it's just like, yeah, it's time for a meeting, or I don't want to go to a meeting. And when I think that, I go. It's just, it's what's got me to where I'm at, and I gotta keep doing it. And whether I like what other people are sharing or not in meetings, you know, at least I can get up there and share how I'm feeling for the day, and maybe someone will relate to it. So hopefully, someone will relate to this, and we get some attention to your blog. And I'm going to read more of it tonight. So I appreciate you coming on. Stay in
touch.
Thank
you very much. I appreciate you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. I'll let you know when this is out, and I'll get that linked on there too.